We are here talking to you, talking to the community. Come on down and see us. You can see where your money is going. I can guarantee it's not going on the massive corporate headquarters we like to joke about. It goes for a very modest little building with a very pretty mural on the front, with a bulging record library. We have dedicated volunteers and staff. We have a small staff, and we have lots of volunteers. That is sort of the secret of our success, is the labor of volunteers who do this for the love of it.
As we get ready to hand it back, I just wanted to mention, Per, our staff is normal sized, but they are few in number.
Few in number, okay.
877-500-5266. It is true, it is less than 10 full-time positions. The real heart and soul of this mission is our hundreds and hundreds of volunteers, our thousands and thousands of contributors, and our many thousands of listeners. Call right now and say thank you. 877-500-5266.
I can swear you've increased in stature over the years.
Thank you, Per.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of Division Midway Alliance's third annual Festival of Nations, where cultures come together. The festival will be held at the Division Center at the intersection of Southeast 122nd Avenue and Southeast Division Street on Sunday, September 20th from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. Catch TriMet bus lines 4 or 71 to get there. The Festival of Nations is a great time for the entire family with music and entertainment, from face painting and balloon art to the Taste of the Nations tent with a variety of food from all over the world. Vendors will sell their goods and community organizations will provide some information about available services in the area. More information at divisionmidwayalliance.com/festival.
Thank you to all the restaurants that have provided food for our volunteers today. Bread and Ink Cafe, located at 3610 Southeast Hawthorne, provided breakfast, serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner in the neighborhood for nearly 30 years. Voodoo Donuts, located at 1501 Northeast Davis, provided donuts, where the magic is in the hole. Corbett Fish House, located at 5901 Southwest Corbett, provided lunch, serving a 100% gluten-free menu for lunch and dinner at two locations in Portland and one in Vancouver. Bombay Shot House, located at 804 Southwest 12th Avenue, provided dinner, serving traditional Indian dishes as well as vegetarian-friendly options.
Good morning. I'm Kathleen Stevenson for the Radio Zine. I'm here with historian, journalist, and editor Michael Hellquist. His new book, published by Oregon State University Press, is Marie Equi, Radical Politics and Outlaw Passions. Michael has written for numerous publications and has edited four volumes on health communication, social marketing, and behavior change. He directed a global AIDS and health communication program. He's originally from Portland. He now lives in San Francisco. And one note that we'll be telling you more about, he is speaking tonight at the Oregon Historical Society at 1200 Southwest Park. Michael Hellquist, thanks very much for coming into KBOO today.
Thanks, Kathleen. It's very I'm very excited to be here.
Marie Equi was one of the first practicing women physicians in the Pacific Northwest. She was also an activist on many issues, including women's suffrage, labor, reproductive freedom, economic justice, peace. Another activist called her the most interesting woman that ever lived in this state, certainly the most fascinating, colorful, and flamboyant. And she was a lesbian, one of the first publicly known lesbians on the West Coast. So, what a person.
She covered a lot of bases.
How did your interest in her develop? How did you come to write this book on Marie Equi?
I first heard of Marie as I was looking at a Portland-based website, the Gay Lesbian Archives of the Pacific Northwest, and I came across this story. This was from 1893, when Marie Equi was on a homestead just outside the Dalles. And I read more, and she was with her girlfriend, who was a school teacher, and an incident developed where the superintendent of the school failed to pay her girlfriend her full salary. They tried to get it and tried to get it, and they couldn't. So Marie reached her limit, and she grabbed a horsewhip stood outside the office of the superintendent, who, by the way, was also a Baptist minister. And when he finally came out, she assaulted him with the horsewhip. And so here's this tussle in the street. So she was 21 years old, slight, and a lesbian attacking a Baptist minister and school superintendent. How could I not be interested?
Right. You do write about that in the book. Some people cheered her on.
They did. The minister was a bit of a scoundrel involved in land frauds on property across the river north of the Dalles. So they didn't mind that she was doing what many of them would have liked to have done.
How did she come to be in Oregon, specifically at that time in the Dalles of all places?
Well, she's originally from New Bedford, Massachusetts. She from a large immigrant working class family. She loved going to school, but she had to drop out after the first year of high school because her parents insisted that she get a job in the textile mills to help support the family. So she got an orientation to the industrialization happening in the country and the poor working conditions. But finally, after 2 years there, a girlfriend rescued her, who came from a family with more money, and invited her out to the homestead. This girlfriend dropped out of Wellesley College herself, started up a homestead just outside the Dalles, invited Marie Equi to join her. So it was really a kind of a last resort, because by that time she knew that she didn't want to get married. She had already turned down suitors in her late teens, and she really had no other options. So this was her escape for something new and, in her mind, a better life.
And how did she happen to, how was she actually able to get to medical school, given that she didn't have money and didn't have a lot of connections?
Well, this is really interesting, of the state of medical education at the day. So this is she started in 1899. She self-studied her way into medical school, meaning she got ready for the entry exam, because a successful passage of the entry exam was all she needed. She didn't need a high school diploma or a teacher's certificate. And she applied and got there just at the right time before the requirements became more strict. And I think her girlfriend in the Dalles helped pay her way initially into medical school. So she was very fortunate, but she was also really determined. Women, and especially working class women, were not expected and certainly not encouraged to become physicians. The attitude was more, if you must have a career, then become a teacher or become a nurse, but that's as far as you're going. And that wasn't as far as she was going.
Right. And she went to San Francisco for at least part of that education.
She did. She went to two different medical schools in San Francisco, and then in 1901 relocated to Portland to the University of Oregon Medical Department, obviously OHSU now. So maybe this was more common, but for 4 years of medical school, she was in three different schools.
And what do we know of her of that time of her life? She was making connections with lots of other women who were studying too.
She was, and she moved to Oregon with another student, Mary Ellen Parker, who she remained with for several years. And they went to school together. They graduated in 1903. They were among the first 60 women to do so in Oregon. And they initially had a practice in Pendleton. But since that work didn't develop so well for the other woman, for Parker, they moved to Portland and got established there by 1905. And she did have what I think were the early makings of a lesbian social circle in Portland, just by the women that became part of her life. She was a very generous and open person, a great sense of humor, and I think she just attracted people by her energy and her goodwill.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with Michael Hellquist. We're talking about his new book, Marie Equi. And that book, let me mention while we're talking, is available as a thank you gift during our membership drive. Oregon State University Press has donated a couple copies. If you want to get that and support KVU at the same time, please give us a call at 877-500-5266. I wanted to ask you about your research that you did for this book. Can you talk a little bit about that, like the challenges or some of the things that made it different from maybe other research that you've done?
Well, it was definitely a challenge. And I think one of the reasons why perhaps there wasn't a full biography of Equi earlier is that there was a sense that there weren't enough primary sources, which means that her journals, her correspondence, memorabilia from her life had been lost, or it was believed that it had all been lost. And so the sense would be it would be hard to write a biography without those. However, I probably underestimated how much effort it would take to unearth materials, but we did. And for one example, we went to her hometown in New Bedford and went to the family's Catholic church. And there, stuffed in a closet, was a cardboard box full of all the family, what's called sacramental records of the births and baptisms and marriages. So it really helped us get a grounding of her family. And then another big source was just court records of later in her life, about 1906, she was involved in a dispute with a wealthy family. And the court records we found in archives, and in there she talks about her testimony. She talks about her medical practice, her relationship with this other woman, and filled in a lot of details. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the greatest repository of Equi material is what the U.S. government, basically the FBI, collected on her during surveillance of her during the several months before her sedition trial, and then also 3 or 4 months of her prison correspondence. Mm. So that's really invaluable.
Mm. And it's great that you credit a former KBOO volunteer, that's Sandy Polishuk, for her work with oral history that also helped with your research.
Sandy's work was critical and is really a foundation of much of what I was able to learn about Equi, and she was so generous in sharing all of those documents for me. It really made this project possible.
And if I can just put in a plug also for my own knowledge of her, I knew about her before I saw the book, mainly because of a KBOO volunteer named Robin Shanti, who years ago did programs on her, and I was quite interested in her, and that was great that she was able to do that at that time. Now, there's a point in the book, and there's a time when I think you make the statement, or somebody makes the statement about Marie Equi, that she went from, I'm paraphrasing here, I'm not saying it exactly, but she went from the parlor to the streets. Can you tell us what that means in her life?
Well, that particular phrase was as a kind of parlor radical or a parlor anarchist, as opposed to someone who got right down in the streets during the demonstrations and risked getting beaten up. I don't know that Marie Equi was ever a sort of parlor anything. Mm-hmm. She always jumped right in anything she felt passionate about, especially if it involved social justice issues. But there came a point where in 1913, there was a cannery strike in East Portland, and she happened upon it after making a home call to a patient. And the women who were striking, who were picketing, called her in and said, "Join us." And so Marie did, and she got up on their tar barrel and implored the other women still working to come out and picket. And with that activity, I think she really altered the course of her life. And that happened because soon thereafter, she got beat up by cops, by police. She was clubbed. And she would say, that just crossed a line for me. She said, I went into this battle as a socialist, but now I'm an anarchist, and no man's going to tell me what I can or what I cannot say.
Is that the incident that had the hat pin, that she used the hat pin? What's the story with the hat pin?
The notorious hat pin story that even the New York Times picked up afterwards. This was at the time of the cannery strike, which, excuse me, became a free speech fight as well. And after she had been beaten up once or twice, she made an announcement. And she said, as a physician, she had access to a deadly virus. And she was going to dip her hatpin in it, and she would stab the first cop that came close to her. And so there were, that's the kind of thing she would say. She didn't dip it into the virus, but evidently she may have stabbed a policeman with it who didn't suffer any great effects. She had a sense of drama. She knew how to get her story across. She knew how to emphasize what was important. And I think that was partly how she had such an impact and really made her one of the most prominent political activists in the early 20th century in Portland and Oregon and throughout the Northwest.
Yeah, the book is, for me, it was a great history of that particular time, the
Till First World War, primarily.
Of the history of that time and what was going on and how radicals were being dealt with and what was happening to them and what was happening to her. So it was great in pointing that out from the Portland perspective. Now, there are many, many relationships that she has with women, and she was known for the intensity of these relationships. Can you talk a little bit about how she met so many important women and what the relationships were like, if they can be generalized at all?
Well, her first one is the one we mentioned on the homestead in the Dalles, which continued for several years. And then she met a woman by the name of Harriet Speckert, who was in her early 20s. She was an heiress to the Olympia Brewery Company. And Harriet was kind of the exception to some of the others she would meet, because she wasn't politically involved. She was more reserved. But Marie stayed with her they lived together from 1905 till about 1918. But then after that, as Equi became more politically engaged, she met more radical women. So she met someone like Margaret Sanger and conducted a protest, because birth control information was outlawed at that time. And Equi and Sanger ended up spending a night in jail. Equi fell in love with her, and that was one example of a love relationship, somewhat one-sided. There was also an Irish nationalist who came to Portland on a speaking tour, Kathleen O'Brennan, who became very much involved with Equi and helped her with her trial. And I think sometimes it was just Equi's energy and passion that drew people in. Because, how sometimes you're just drawn to that kind of a person. Mm-hmm. There's just a powerful draw. And then late in her life, when she was almost finishing her practice, Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, who was a much better known political activist in the country, she came on a tour of Portland, and she became ill, and seriously ill. And she had to stop her tour, and Marie started taking care of her. And it was a serious condition, and she lived with Equi in Equi's Goose Hollow home off and on for 9 years. So here were the two pretty much most prominent women activists familiar in the Pacific Northwest, living together rather quietly at that time over the, during the Depression. And Margaret Sanger, though, in a more general sense, Margaret Sanger has this statement about her. It says, Marie Ecuy managed to grab every celebrated woman who came to town to speak and pull her aside. And that's partly how she broadened her circle, I think.
Right. And she was quite involved with the Wobblies. She supported them, and she ministered, used her physician skills to minister to them. How did that lead to her, or how was that contribute to her eventual arrest, and this time her imprisonment?
I think she was attracted to the Wobblies because they were independent. It wasn't a highly organized group, the industrial workers of the world. And that appealed to her. She couldn't actually become a member because she was a professional herself and self-employed. But they revered her because here she was, a woman of standing and a physician who would get out in the streets with them and fight for her. And that activity pulled her into free speech fights and got her positioned in an anti-war stance, although the Wobblies themselves didn't get involved overly with protests to World War I. But it put Ecuy on the front lines. And then her anti-war protest is when the government had her under surveillance and chose to charge her with sedition under the Espionage Act.
Mm. And she had a trial. And what was the outcome?
It was an all-male jury, and they found her guilty in all the counts that the judge presented to them. And it was interesting in the trial, the federal prosecutor, to give you a sense of how Ecuy's politics and her transgressive sexuality intertwined in the public mind. The prosecutor in public courtroom called her a degenerate and an unsexed woman. Pretty inflammatory. So she received a sentence of 3 years, and an appeal was made to President Wilson, and at the last minute before she was to go off to prison, he commuted her sentence to a year and a day. And then they chose San Quentin, which is a state prison, not a federal, but it's the only one that could take women prisoners.
Right. Her daughter said that her spirit was broken by that.
I think it was too, and it was really important to get her daughter's comment, and this is something that came from Sandy Polishook's interview with her, because the prison letters that Marie Ecuy sent to friends, I think she downplayed the serious impact on herself, both because she just didn't want that word. She didn't want people to think she was broken by this experience. But a few of her letters, she would tell her friends, for instance, I have to stop thinking about that I set aside my medical practice and I'm separated from it. If I think about it too much, I'll just fall into what I call a brain fever.
Mm-hmm. Well, the time is going fast in this interview, Michael. I want to let people know about your events before we go. I am speaking with Michael Hellquist. We're talking about his new biography, Marie Ecuy, and the subtitle is Radical Politics and Outlaw Passions. It's a very good read, as well as a great historical document. So thank you for that. He will be speaking tonight at the Oregon Historical Society. It's at 1200 Southwest Park. That's at 7 p.m. Also, he will...
Excuse me. Sure. And that's free and open to the public.
Thank you. And he's also at Triumph Coffee. That's at 201 East 12th Avenue. That's tomorrow at 7 p.m. And at the OHSU Library, 3181 Southwest Sam Jackson Road. That is Thursday, 10 in the morning. And also Thursday at Broadway Books at 7 p.m. That's at 714 Northeast Broadway. So you've got quite the packed schedule in the next day or so, Michael. I want to thank you very much for coming in and talking about this, and I very much enjoyed reading the book. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciated this opportunity.
And I want to let our listeners know now that you can get one of the two copies of Michael's book, Marie Equi, with your pledge to KABU right now. We have Justin and Pear with us, and they can tell you more about the number to call, 877-500-5266, and other things to help you get to the phone right now and help support KABU during a membership drive.
Thank you so much, Kathleen. Yes, my name is Justin, and I'm joined by Pear, and we are in the midst of our fall membership drive, reminding listeners near and far that the only way this work gets done is with a little of your support when you call 877-500-5266. 877-500-KBOO. If you could start a monthly contribution of a minimum modest $5 a month, that would amount to $60. We could send you one of these two copies of Marie Equi, Radical Politics and Outlaw Passions by Michael Helquist. And I just want to mention, I really appreciate this because all the time I talk about the things that we teach the community, and this was a hole in my knowledge. And so I just found myself getting edified. I'm very grateful, and I tend to think that I'm not the only one. So a few of you who are listening right now could call up at 877-500-5266 and introduce yourself.
Well, I'll bet if Marie Equi were alive today, she'd be right down here at KABU helping lead this station on a more radical politics and confronting the powers that be. So this is a fascinating book. It is yours for a $60 minimum pledge. I want to thank some people who contributed online. I want to thank Andy in Portland. Andy loves Bluegrass Saturdays. That's another thing we do here at KABU. We have great music. And also want to thank David from Portland, Randy from Portland, and Yvonne from Portland. They all contributed online, which you can do by going to kboo.fm and clicking on that jar up there in the corner, and it's very easy to do. Otherwise, come on down here to 20 Southeast 8th. Come on down and visit with us. See where your money is going. You can see that it's not being spent on a lot of lavish corporate headquarters or anything. It's being spent on the bare bones of a radio station and a wonderful record library. Or give us a call at 877, like that person right there, 877-500-5266. Do it now. You'll feel much, much better.
Yes, you will improve your sense of self, as we were hearing about earlier.
That's right.
I just wanted to mention there's been some great coverage on issues around women this morning, and that's very important. We were hearing about the legality of abortion earlier during the Old Mole Variety Hour, and now we're just hearing about this indomitable spirit in Marie Equi. And that's just another example of the kind of thing that is given far too little shrift at other media sources. We are certainly looking to change that, and we bring a lot of programs by and for women. I was thinking the Bread and Roses Collective on Friday evenings does that before the Bluegrass Saturdays. There are a lot of different reasons, and we know that you give for your reasons, dear listeners, not for ours, but I think we're giving you a lot of reasons right now. We're asking you to consider converting that into a modest monthly contribution. I mean, we'd take any contributions, but the most convenient and powerful way to support KABU is doing that monthly deduction. That's what over 40% of KABU members do, and they donate an average of about $11.50 a month, and maybe you could do that as well. 877-500-5266.
Well, I have the book right here in my hand. It's got kind of a neat cover on. The cover's got her police mugshot and a picture of her and her women comrades out there marching, and it really looks like a fascinating book, and it is yours for a mere $60 minimum pledge, and that is so doable. It comes down to pennies a day, and it's do it on an electronic funds transfer, and you don't have to worry about it. that takes care of itself. That is a gift that keeps sustaining itself until you tell it to stop, and we hope you never do.
Well, one of the lovely things there is, as we were mentioning earlier, we're hearing from more and more of our ongoing contributors that they cannot remember offhand what is the amount of their monthly contribution. To me, that suggests that it is not unduly painful, it is not breaking the bank, that $5 or $10 a month can be done without changing the metric. I was also thinking, isn't it wonderful that we have heroes calling in to support heroes? People call in to support the station while we're doing programming about local heroism. And that's a wonderful closed loop system, and we hope that you will do that right now. You can do that online from anywhere on earth if your computer is connected to the Interconyes, and that's at kboo.fm. Or you can call us up. We're going to get out of the way here because time slow. Tom waits for no man, as they say. And we're going to remind you that we're still standing by with a couple of phone lines open. Thanks to all who have called this morning. And for those of you who are moving to your phone right now to maybe see if there's one more copy of this book, Marie Equi, Radical Politics and Outlaw Passions by Michael Hellquist, please call right now and introduce yourself. 877-500 KBOO.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
And now the KBOO News at noon for Monday, September 14th, 2015. In local news, violent incidences labeled as gang-related reached an all-time high in Portland this month. The Portland Police Department's gang enforcement team has investigated 125 incidences of gang violence this year, up from the previous record set in 2012, and an almost 40% increase from last year. Portland law enforcement officials believe gang violence was worse in the 1990s, but prior to 1998, official police statistics did not specify if police actions were gang-related. The record numbers of gang-related incidences are expected to rise as there is still more than 3 months left in the year. A federal court has approved an agreement between the city of Molalla and the Bear Creek Recovery Conservation Group over faulty operations at the city's sewage plant. The lawsuit was originally filed in March of 2014 and claimed the city of Molalla was violating the Federal Clean Water Act due to poor maintenance and operation of the city's sewage plant. The agreement reached between the conservation group and the Molalla city government stipulates the city must spend at least $250,000 over the next 2 years on repairs to the sewage facility and leaking sewage pipes located throughout the city. This is the second lawsuit against the city of Molalla for their failure to operate the city's sewage plant in accordance with federal statutes. A prior lawsuit and subsequent legal agreement in 2006 forced the city to clean up the sewage